Welcome, my friend. You are listening to Read Clean YA with CJ, the podcast for teens and young adults who want to explore exciting worlds, deep themes, and epic stories without the objectionable content. I'm your host, award-winning young adult author, CJ Malacy, and in this episode, we are going to dive into an author interview with my friend and young adult author, L.E. Richmond. L.E. Richmond was practically born with a book in her hands, the result of being raised by an American writing teacher and a German bookseller. From a tender age, fairy tales have held a special place in her heart, leading to The Mermaid's Tale, a spin-off of Hans Christian Andersen's classic, as her debut novel. When not crafting stories rooted in lore and fairy tales, she can be found chasing three little muggles, running crazy distances, and brewing homemade kombucha. She has never yet met a mermaid, but when she and her husband eventually complete an Ironman, she plans to use the 2.4-mile swim in search of one. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be back.
I am so happy to have you back. For those who might not know, Laura was a guest on the show before, and we talked about her fantastic retelling of The Little Mermaid. It's called The Mermaid's Tale. Well, that's book one of a duology. And I encourage you, if you haven't heard that episode, check it out and check out her books. That duology is so much fun. You're going to love it. But today we are going to be discussing her newest book, which I had the privilege of reading early, and I absolutely loved this book. So I have been excited to dive into this conversation and talk about the story. And I'm going to confess to all of you listeners, I have been pronouncing the title wrong this like whole time. Every time I was reading it, I was pronouncing it wrong. So I'm going to give it a shot. And I think I'm going to say it wrong again. So Laura's going to have to correct me. But Laura, would you share with us a little bit about, I can't even. You can tell us the title.
Yes. So the title of the book is Andromache, because the main character is named after Hector's wife from the Iliad. So that's my love of Greek mythology coming out there. But it's not a Greek mythology spinoff. It is a dystopian cyberpunk futuristic based in the U.S. And it's a retelling of the biblical book of Esther, because I'm all about retellings.
And it is so much fun. And I love the set in the future imagined worlds kind of setting, which is what I do with all of my books. And this resonated so much for that, but it also that bit of like Esther retelling in there, but there's all kinds of stuff that happens. This world is epic on so many levels. And I just loved the way you wove in this futuristic technology and what the world could look like with America having fallen, which it's a fascinating thing to think about. It's what I explore in my own stories too. So I think I just really resonated with the direction of the book. What's fun for me is how two authors can be like, okay, what if America falls? And then what happens with the world? And come up with two totally different worlds. And it's the best part about imagination and storytelling. So how did the idea for this book come about?
You know, it was interesting. I was actually talking to a friend of mine who's a publisher, AJ Skelly, and she had actually been interested in The Mermaid's Tale, and I signed with Enclave Publishing instead. And so she and I were friends. One day she was like, would you write a book for me? And I was like, sure, why not? And I was looking at what other books she had in Quill and Flame at the time, and I didn't see any dystopian. And like you, CJ, I love dystopian. I think it's fascinating to me that so many dystopian books could kind of, like, if you told it in a sentence, they sound exactly the same. And then you read them and you're like, they're so different. Like, it's not the same story at all. So anyway, I was like, oh, I'd love to give a shot at dystopian because I love retellings. Again, I was like, what could I retell? What could I weave into that element? And so I was thinking about Esther. Dystopian always has this element in it of being like, what's this utopian ideal that goes wrong, right? Like, what do people value that they then completely corrupt? What becomes their idol? And for me, the exploration in Andromache is about fertility. And then at the same time, the value that people have apart from what they can produce.
I think one of the themes that I saw over and over throughout the story was just the value of human life and that being so important, and in a world that didn't value every human life equally. And even your tagline for the book is some lives are valuable, but none are sacred. And that is like chilling to think about. Mm-hmm. And yet
it is how some people view people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why dystopian can be powerful, because it does take this idea and turn it to its almost worst possible conclusion. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, if you take the thread of this thought that maybe even on the surface, you know, fertility, reproducing in a world where the population has gone down and died out on so many levels and you need more people, there's something in that you're like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
But then when that becomes your God and your all-consuming focus, it becomes something more valuable than the actual people that you're trying to reproduce, which is ridiculous. But yet what happens when we pull on our own, you know, ideas as opposed to valuing life the way God did?
Yeah. Absolutely. And it was really interesting. And I did love it because one of the main characters is from that society where the humans are the ruling class, right? And to kind of explore his trains of thought where he's not the villain. He's not a bad guy, but that you can make logical, quote unquote, arguments for why these things are good. And then you meet the actual people that are involved and the actual people who are regarded as worthless. And it all falls apart.
Yeah. So this is like this big theme in the story, but there's also all of these other like political intrigue and, you know, it is an estuary telling and you can pick that up. You've got your Haman character that kind of pokes his head up and you're like, don't trust him, don't trust him. Yeah. You know, it's like all this kind of crazy, scary stuff that's going on. And even Andy is facing a lot as she's in this place, because unlike the story of Esther, where it's just beauty treatment, she has to go through a lot of other things as well. And I'm afraid of spoilers, but I believe you talk about this even in your back cover a little bit. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the other elements at play in the story besides just the, you know, find a bride kind of flavor?
Yes. Yes. So one of the big ideas is that there are challenges called gauntlets. That there are 5 girls chosen, and basically the idea is who's the most worthy to be the consort, to be the wife of the elector. And so they go through these gauntlets, and it's teaching them how to be a political woman, a female political leader, basically. But what they don't know until the first one is over is that there's a point system, a scoring system, and that the elector can only pick out of the top 2. So basically, it doesn't matter if he falls in love with one of the girls. If you don't score high enough, he still can't marry you. So that's kind of the rub the entire time.
Yes. And it adds a lot of fun tension. And Denzel is the main male character, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he is kind of a brooding character a little bit. But yet, the more you get to see him and know him, the more you see this heart behind him that draws you in and draws, I think, Andy in as well. But it is fun to watch the tension at play in the whole story with the two of them, because they're from totally different worlds, which fits with the story of Esther as well.
Yes. Yeah. No, again, I really enjoyed writing him, because in The Mermaid's Tale and The Locket's Revenge, the main character, Darren, the main male character, he's very different. Like he for me, he was my Mr. Knightley, older, very kind, a protector, that vibe. And Denzel, or he goes by Xavier is, he's just much more, he's younger and more like of a firebrand in a way. Like he has this strong desire for justice is kind of what is in him. And it was really fun for me to write him to be like, that's what kind of drives you, and your mind can be changed, but it's hard. Like that's an element of my own husband, Kyle. That I love about him, that he believes stuff strongly. And again, you can change his mind, but it's pretty difficult.
It's fun when the people in our real lives kind of start influencing some of the characters, isn't it?
It is. I know. Or when you realize it after, right? Like you write someone and you're like, oh, wait, you're actually this person in my life, or you have this element of this person in you. That's where it came from.
And then I think those characters have a life to them that's even more unique than some others we might write, because we know the person that we didn't even mean to base them off of.
Yes,
and
right,
so,
right.
So they just come to life in a fun way through the story, which I love that.
Do you have any characters in your own book on the back end? You're like, oh, this is who influenced you in my real life.
There are definitely characters in my books that do. And especially as you get deeper into the series, there are different elements, you know, those Easter eggs where if you're in my family or friends, close friend group that knows the people around me, you'll be like, that's totally about this person.
I feel you.
In my third book, I actually have a group that is inspired by my dad and my uncle. Their names are in the book and some of the guys my dad works with. And I don't even know if those guys have read my book, but they all love the book because they know they're in the, they know they're in there, and they're just straight up in the book because there was a circumstance that I was like, I can weave this into a story. And I just decided to do it. And it was so much fun.
That's great. I love that.
Yes. So another character that I'm forgetting his name at the moment, but it was a kid and he's really close to Andy. Can you tell us a little bit about his character as well? Because he was a fun element that happens early in the story and I think makes Andy someone we really love kind of immediately because of her relationship with him.
Absolutely. So his name is Heath and he is seven. And I really, again, this was just enjoyable for me, was to explore some ideas from a different angle, right? So in a lot of history, it's actually been girls who are undervalued by society, girls who are not able to inherit. And so at that point, you know, you think of like the Romans putting daughters out to die because they couldn't provide value to the family is what was believed, the lie that was believed. And so I, in this case, gender flipped it in my society, because since the girls in sync in this poverty stricken Western society, they could go east and marry the elector. They were the ones that were valued. So Heath's mother, who has a very dark past, she has a lot of daughters. And so basically then the son is the one that she does not value, that she does not see him bringing anything to her. And she leaves him out on the beach to die. Andy finds him and he's kind of the fun little sidekick. Children are so much fun because they have not they've not yet gotten the tact that some of us get later on in life. But that's so fun because they say whatever they're thinking. You're like, I know that you're not trying to hide anything. You're not putting on a show. You're just saying straight up whatever you think. And so anyway, that's the relationship that he and Andy have. And what's cool is that he also, again, I think children get undervalued in general, just in society in general. And Jesus says that the kingdom of heaven belongs to little children, and that if you want to enter it, you need to become like a child again. And the way that that played in a little bit to this story was that when Andy kind of starts slipping into that rich, powerful world on the East Coast, Heath is actually the one who kind of pulls her back. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you becoming the person they're trying to make you? Again, you say it's all to save us, but you're becoming that princess. What's wrong with you? And yeah, just having that wisdom from a child.
I love that. I think kids can teach us so much more than so many adults are willing to see. Yeah. And I love that you pointed out Jesus always valued children and he was willing to have them come, and he yelled at his disciples when they kept them from coming. And I love that he valued children so much. And it's fun having that kind of character in the story because kids do say what they think. Yeah. You really can't get away without a kid telling you all the things that their parents might not want them to be telling you.
Exactly. Yes.
There's something freeing about that as well, though, because it is just blatant honesty. And there's a wisdom that comes with that because they're not trying to hide things or be so tactful that they end up lying, really.
Exactly,
it ends up just this bold truth. And for Andy, Heath is the one who's like, wake up, honey. And, you know, she needed it and she needs that. One thing that even as you're talking about all these different characters, it's a theme you've already mentioned, but one I'd love to dive into more is the theme of how each life has value and meaning no matter what. And we see it in how you've talked about Heath and Andy and even Xavier, because each of them coming from such different places and walks in life, and yet there is a value in who they are. And as people created in the image of God, that's such an important reality that's easy to forget. How did that theme kind of come out in the story for you? Was it something you planned, or did it just surprise you with how prevalent it was?
Yeah, I did actually plan it. This one was probably the book I have most written that I was like, oh, there's like a conviction that is actually driving this particular story. The reason is because it actually does play into society as we know it now. Obviously, like you said, dystopian takes things to the worst possible conclusion you can reach. But the reality is that we see all around us always humans trying to devalue other humans. Like that just is what we have. And that the reality comes back to being like, if there is no God, then that actually makes sense. Like it, yeah. It does, because again, it's twisted and brutal, but it does make sense. You can follow it to its logical conclusion. What I always think of actually is a line from Harry Potter where Voldemort says, there's only power and those too weak to take it. And I'm wow. like, again, no God, no intrinsic value for people. That is what you're left with whoever is strongest yeah. calling the shots. And so what I wanted to do with Andy was to, as people have done before, like I love The Giver for that same reason, was to just show the ugliness of it. But again, I think, like I was trying to say again with Xavier, he has some rational arguments in his mind for what is happening. And he doesn't know the full extent, but again, he has some rational arguments and that when we get bogged down sometimes in that argument, what you really need is to see the face of a child or to see a person who's a real person, regardless of, again, what they can do. And that dismantles that facade of logical reason why someone doesn't matter.
Mm. It's so true. That is a prevalent thought in our society even now. And it is because if we take God, like you said, out of the picture, then yeah, the logical conclusion is the strongest are the ones who survive, the ones who have the most power, the most whatever, they're the ones who succeed. And at the end of the day, if we take God, if we take eternity off the table, then this is what we end up with. No life matters and every person is expendable at the end of the day to get what you want, to live your quote unquote best, happiest life. Mm-hmm. But if we do that, we end up with the opposite, because that isn't how God designed us and it's not how he designed the world. If we devalue people, then we become less and less who we were created to be as a person.
Exactly.
And that ends up destroying us and destroying those around us. And I think this story gives the beautiful display of that in the ugliness and darkness of it, but also what does it look like to be someone who says no in the face of a culture that not only would incline you to believe this way, but actually force you to believe this way, to say with all they're doing, you know, oh, life doesn't matter. And what does it look like to actually be someone who's willing to stand up there? And so that, I think, is a powerful thing. I love stories. It's something I've talked about before. I think you and I have talked about it before, but just for this very reason, to have a conversation with someone and be like, well, life matters, but then to actually display it through a story, through looking at a child, looking at a person who you like, who's looked at in a culture that says, you don't matter. Mm-hmm. What does that look like for that person to actually say, no, I do. I was created and I matter. And how do you rise above all of this insanity? And I think you did that so beautifully through this story, and it really resonated with me, and I'm sure it will resonate with so many readers as well.
Thank you. I hope so. Again, that's the prayer, that it will do something.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this theme a lot, but I think if you were to sit down with a reader, even who's struggling with even seeing their own value, and you handed them Andy's story, what would you want them to know deep within their heart when they finish that book? You know, stories, I think, can leave something with us forever. And what would your prayer and your desire be for that reader when they close your story and finish the book?
Yeah, I would want them to come away with actually not only their value, but with their agency. Because I think it's easy to think, I can't do anything. Like, that's actually part of the story of Esther from the Bible, of her basically, when Mordecai originally talks to her, of her being like, I can't do anything. Like, the king, he's kind of done with me at this point. Like, I haven't seen him in ages. Nothing's going to work. I can't do it. And him being like, God's going to provide deliverance at some point through somebody, and it could be you. And I think the reality is that the more that we believe that God can use us and that we actually do have power, like, even secular society believes this, that people who are confident and people who are, to use maybe one of their words, empowered, they actually have the ability to change stuff. Part of it is that belief that you can. And again, as Christians, we have a different source of that power, the Holy Spirit working in us. Yeah. But I would want them to be like, I can change something. These bad things that I see around me, I can change them. And some of it's big and some of it's small, right? Like that was part of the story too, to look at different people. And like Andy ends up as counselor, right? Like she ends up in that, or being picked to be counselor, in that position of power. But you look at someone like Heath or like Bella, who encourages Andy and who is there for her as her friend and pushes her forward. You see that and you're like, you are making change too in what is deemed a smaller way, but you are still showing that value. Or even Lita, who's this background character caring for Heath. It's like, you are making change. Or at the end of the story, again, I don't want to spoil it, but there's an element of being like, maybe you can't change the entire world. Like maybe you can't, but maybe you can save one person. Like maybe that's what your option is. That would be what I hope people would see, of being like, you are God's masterpiece. Throughout, there's a line that says, do we not all have value because we bear his fingerprints? And we do, because we're God's masterpieces. But also to be like, because I'm his masterpiece, I can do something. Like he gave me that ability to make change, to do something different, to step out of the shadows.
I love that. One of my favorite passages is in 1 Corinthians, and it just talks about how God chooses the weak. He chooses those who the world would cast aside, who people would think nothing of. Mm-hmm. And it's so that he ends up with the glory in the end, but he empowers us to do the work he calls us to do what's in front of us. And sometimes we want it to look like, well, I need to change the world, or I could never change the world. And I think that's the wrong perspective. Jesus is the one who changes the world. Yeah. He's the one who did that. But we can be used by him to change a life, to change a situation, to even change our neighborhood, our families, the people around us, by just walking out what he gives us to do each day. And I love the idea of walking away with that agency, that understanding that, yes, I can make a choice today to do what's in front of me. And that can actually make a change that will ripple into eternity in a way that right now we can't fully understand, because to touch one life in that way brings a greater change than I think we can comprehend on this side of eternity.
Absolutely. I think you're right. It reminds me of Josh Wilson, maybe, his song Dream Small. I do really like that one, because it's that same idea of being like, I think we can get paralyzed by the idea of being like, I have to change the world or my country or this government or, you know, whatever. And we get paralyzed and we don't do the actual thing that's right there. It's like, no, you could actually make a difference. It's maybe not going to be on a global scale, but you could make a real difference, and you're becoming paralyzed by this idea that it has to be huge.
Mm. And we miss out on the beauty of the daily things that God has for us by being paralyzed by the huge. And it's something that I personally am always coming back to, because I'm like, Lord, you have something today that matters for me to walk in. You know, I love Ephesians. I'm so bad at full verse and chapter references, but it's in Ephesians. And it talks about how God has given us good works that he prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. And I love that idea that God's prepared something for me today to walk in. And he's done that for each and every one of us. And it's the little things that prepare us for the biggest moments of our lives. And even Andy, it's the choices she makes throughout the story that prepare her for the biggest decisions, the biggest stands, the scariest moments that she faces. But it was first choosing the scary moment of standing up for a little boy on a beach who was left to die, and choosing to not leave him there. And it's those choices in the small, seemingly insignificant moments, the times we don't think anyone else sees, or that it just doesn't matter. Those daily choices, those small decisions, those moments are the ones that are preparing us for the courage we will need to stand when God calls us to in a bigger way. Yeah. And he prepares us through that daily choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So as we kind of move toward the end of our time here, we have talked about you before on this podcast, but I still love to kind of give our listeners a peek behind the curtain. And last time you were here, you just were coming out with your very first book, and now you have three books out. So what is it like now that you're a multi-published author? You have three books and three kids. And so how has all of that been just in the changes since the last time you were on the show?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because it feels like a lot has changed and in another way, not much has changed. It's kind of fun as an author to feel like I'm gaining a little bit of traction. Again, haven't hit New York Times yet or anything, but I was at a live event the other day and a girl walks past and turns around and goes, "There's Ellie Richmond." And I was like, "What? You know who I am?" You know? So again, it is fun to be like, I feel like I'm gaining a little bit of momentum here now that I'm on my third book. But I don't want to give anyone a false impression. I do feel like I am in the grind right now of being like, every book sale is blood, sweat, and tears for me. And just what has been so beautiful. Yeah, I just tell people this. God was kind to give me like the gift of writing. I didn't know that I wanted it, to be honest. I didn't know I needed it to some level. And I always tell people I'm a middle child. I have always struggled with wanting to just take the easy road through life and the path of least resistance. And what has been so neat is that with writing, I love it so much that I'm like, I will take all of this. I will take all the bad things. I'll take all the difficult things that go along with this to keep doing this. And it's felt really cool, that like vocation element. Yeah, I'm sorry. I kind of got off on a tangent there.
I love it. No, it was great.
Yes, it is great. And I have loved it. I have another book that's scheduled to come out next spring. And it's again a genre shift. I cannot stick to one genre apparently to save my life. So there will be one coming out in the spring. And then I am writing another fairy tale retelling that's similar. It's got some similarity to The Mermaid's Tale in audience.
Oh, fun.
Then, you know, I have secret plans as well.
Yay.
Yes.
For, all the secret plans.
For next year, I have secret plans as well.
Yes, I love it. And one thing I've seen so far, even though you genre shift, you do love your retellings. Are you kind of keeping that little spice in all of your stories? Like even the one next year, that's another genre shift. Is there that retelling?
Yes, there is. So it has so far in all my stories, I've written 8 books. So far, there's always that element in there. I have one that is not a completed manuscript that for me is a slight retelling, but most people wouldn't know it because it's actually from a book that is fairly, that's not that well known. So the element that's in there, I think if I build it as a retelling, people would be like, of what? I don't know what you're talking about.
I understand. Abandoned Shores is that one for me because there's a element of retelling from Lorna Doone, which is an old story that not a lot of people know. Yes, but it's so
the movie.
I love it.
I actually
the
really
movie
love
is so good. The movie is really good.
I love the movie.
And so if you're looking for a fun older movie to watch, Lorna Doone is really great. Always loved the movie Lorna Doone. I love the story.
Yes.
And I wanted to steal parts of that and kind of work that into a kind of dystopian setting. So that was Abandoned Shores. But I don't say that because not everyone knows Lorna Doone. You kind of, they're like, the cookie? And you're like, no, not the cookie. Like, the story. No, it's not a story about a cookie. Like,
so hilarious. I love it. I love Lorna Doone. I'm going to have to like read this and be like, what is
that? Yeah. I think if you've seen the movie or if you know the story, you might be able to pick up parts of it for sure. But
I love it. It's so cool.
So much fun. Well, we are running out of time for today, but can you share before we go where readers can connect with you and find your books?
Yes, absolutely. I am most active on Instagram and then on Substack through my email newsletter. So either of those, Instagram, it's just at L.E. Richmond, and then Substack, I should be able to think of a link and can't. So I'm going to tell you, if you go to my website, Laura Richmond Writes, and fill out the contact form there, you can get signed up. Then my books are all over the place. They're on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, ChristianBooks.com. Andromache is actually on Kindle Unlimited, if I have any KU readers out there. And then my sister actually narrated the book, which is pretty fun. So it's on Spotify, I think it's on Chirp. It's supposed to be on Audible. I think Audible was being a little bit of a pain, but it's supposed to be on there as well.
Classic Audible.
Classic.
That's fantastic. And I'll have links to those places and to your Substack. We'll link to that in the show notes as well. So it's nice and easy for everyone to connect with you. But Ellie Richmond, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
And thank you, CJ. It was a great time.
I hope you enjoyed listening in on this conversation with L.E. Richmond. I always love talking with Laura and hearing her heart behind her stories, and this story in particular was one I thoroughly enjoyed. I was able to read an early copy, as I said before, and I wanted to share my endorsement of the book with you. Intrigue, romance, and dangerous alliances await readers in the dystopian adventure Andromache. Be prepared to get swept away in a story that will leave you breathlessly turning the page to find out what happens next, swooning over the sweet romance and cheering on characters who will stay with you long after the book is over. L.E. Richmond delivers a spellbinding tale that touches the heart and reminds readers that no life is meaningless or disposable. This book is not to be missed. And as you can probably tell, I really enjoyed this story. There are some elements that might be for a little bit of an older reader, and it has a heavier romance subplot, as you can imagine, since it is an Esther retelling. So those are things to keep in mind as you go through the book, but it is a fantastic read. And as you heard in our interview today, it is a story that really touches on deep themes that will resonate in your heart long after you finish the book. So I encourage you to check it out. On a more personal note, I have my upcoming Kickstarter for book 4 in my Taliona series launching this May, just a couple of weeks from when this episode airs. It will begin on May 1st and run through May 23rd, and it is for book 4, Captive of Talionis, but you'll be able to get all 4 books in the Talionis series during the Kickstarter. I love running Kickstarter campaigns because it gives me a chance to connect with my readers, to provide awesome extras and bonuses, and I even get to sell special editions of the book that are limited and numbered. So if you want a special collector's edition of the series, or if you just want to grab book 4 before anyone else gets the chance to read it, then I encourage you to check out the Kickstarter. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. You can click notify me on launch at the current pre-launch page of the campaign, or if you're listening to this after May 1st, you can go and back the Kickstarter and purchase your copy of the story. I would love to see you among the backers, and being a part of that campaign, it would mean so much to me. So if you're looking for a fun dystopian adventure to check out, then please feel free to dive in to that series. I would love to see you there. Thank you so much for listening to Read Clean YA with CJ. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend so they can discover exciting, clean young adult books too.